Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Oye, oye. Ay.
¿Qué pasa, baby?
Hey. Hey.
Ay, sí.
Más tarde. Sona un
play.
Hey. Wow. We're about to start.
Hey, what happened?
Hey. ¿Qué hora es?
Wow, you don't know what time it is. It's time to start the show on Black Hole Radio, baby. Havana, Harlem, with your host, Ornel Mulet. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. And here's Ornel.
Good evening and welcome to Black Holes Radio Havana Harlem Live. This is Onen Mulet. I am your host and I am here with pianist and composer Michelle Rosewoman. We're going to talk about her latest release on Advanced Disc, Michelle Rosewoman's New Yoruba. This is the 30-year anniversary of the ensemble, a musical celebration of Cuba in America. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Onel.
I'm really glad to be sitting down here with you talking about the beautiful music on this disc. It's a 2-CD set, and it's been a long time coming. A lot of people have been waiting for this music to come out, and I gotta say, it's a beautiful, beautiful project. Just the way that everything came together, the compositions, the musicians that you chose and you were able to get for this recording. Talk to me a little bit about how this whole journey started with you.
That's one of those things you don't know where to start the story, because music is like that. You know, it's like this endless kind of a continuum of events that takes you through your life. But where did it begin? I never know where to say it starts, but because I think you kind of don't come here as a blank slate, you know, into this life. So it starts even further back. But in my home, I did come up hearing you know, all kinds of music, more very traditional jazz, a lot of R&B, and music from around the world, very spiritually based music, music from the mountains of Peru and Chile, from gamelan music from Indonesia, East Indian music, music from Africa. I just felt very touched by music that was connected to everyday kinds of living and where the music had a spiritual basis, as well as, you know, the influence of great jazz artists and the music of my time, you know, being from Oakland, California, hearing a lot of funk and R&B. I would say that all of these things, you know, really touched me deeply. But when I first heard really pure Cuban folklore traditions, I was in my teens, and I happened into a class in Afro-Cuban percussion. I had started playing piano at age 6, and I was well on my way with piano, already into jazz and improvising and whatnot. And I was hanging out basically at a community college. I wasn't enrolled. I had auditioned for the big band and got in, and I was taking a class in harmony. I took 2 semesters of that class, and during that time, I came across a sign on a street pole, one of them old wooden street poles, you know, that said class in Afro-Cuban percussion. And I walked into that room, and there was about 14, you know, men or boys, young men, and 2 teachers, and 2 or 3 congas. And I said, oh, Lord, I'm never going to get to play, you know, I thought to myself. And but it was the opposite, because Marcus Gordon, who became my first teacher and remains a really, really close friend, he's actually from New York, and he came up here with Gene Golden, and they were really amongst the first to bring Bata out into the public, to the Village Vanguard and things of that nature in the 60s. So I met Marcus at that time, you know, which led to, when I came here, meeting Gene immediately, et cetera, you know, jumping ahead, now jumping back. So Marcus would see that I was picking up things pretty quick, so he had me showing everybody else how to do it. So he, Michelle, Sean, take the drum. You know? So I had plenty of time on the drum, and then I ended up studying privately with him. But at that time, it was about, oh, we were just, you know, you couldn't get your hands on music. It was really very hard it wasn't available like it is today. So those of us that were into it were definitely kindred spirits. There was just no question, because how did one even get into that? It had to call you
right.
from your heart, because it would. How did you even encounter it? You know, these things can't be accidents. So, you know, we would exchange cassettes. It was about the Papines, about Huahuanco Matancero. It was about Conjunto Folklorico. You know, we would exchange these tapes, cassette tapes, like
mm-hmm.
jewels, you know.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where, you know, really where I... and I didn't know it then, but I was into jazz, and I got deeply into these traditions, more the more sacred traditions, because the first things we learned in the class were like the Bembe rhythms and songs to the Orishas. So I remember I got myself a couple of ogombops, you know, which I have today right
mm-hmm,
here.
That's right.
And I got the set for two beautiful drums, like a tumbao and segundo, for I think it was like $250 total, maybe $350. And then later on, I had bought a third conga. But I would sit in my room and just play these bembe rhythms and sing the cantos that I learned. And I experienced a different feeling, the way the air changed. I mean, it was metaphysical, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a big impact on me in terms of realizing the power of the traditions, the drums as well, you know. And then... being a piano player, you know, it fed into my playing immediately, my concepts of rhythm and everything. I was talking about something, but basically, just that at that time, the worlds were pretty separate, but they became my two realms of greatest interest, and I pursued them equally, you know. And at some point, I just really began to hear the music as one in my head. And, I mean, I have expressed this in various interviews at this point recently a lot. But the fact is, literally, that I was hearing these cantos in my dreams in a contemporary jazz kind of a setting. So I would wake up with that music in my head, and I began to put it together the way that I heard it. And then that really jumped into play when I moved to New York in 1978. It was in those years following. And then I met Pontilla in 1980. And he brought a lot of the Arara stuff here, which we hadn't really heard. We all knew the Yoruba songs,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just suddenly had a whole, like, a resource that I had not had. And so the things I was hearing in my head and in my dreams had a shape that they could take through someone that brought the real thing, not only brought it here, but gave us access to it.
Right.
And it was beautiful because he needed people to know it so that he could do what he does, Orlando Puntilla Rios.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was nobody here that he could really call on to do stuff until he taught them what it was he wanted. So that was good for all of us, because we got to learn. He wanted people who wanted to learn.
Right, and you can learn firsthand right there with a master.
Wow, that was...
Yeah, that's...
There's no words for... I mean, we both know that, for his impact.
Yeah.
And that's forever.
Uh-huh.
Most everybody would credit Pontilla some kind of way.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of the biggest ways that Pontilla ensured his legacy, was by being so generous and being so open with what he had and what he... was able to offer everybody.
And he was challenged and questioned for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Same way with Julito and a lot of the people that came before him that came here.
Well, actually, you know, Julito wasn't open like that. He was much more private, and he's one of the people that questioned Puntilla's generosity.
Right.
But you need both.
Mm-hmm.
You need guys like Julito that say, huh, we're not giving this away, and this
mm-hmm.
can't be everybody's, you know.
Right.
And then you need people like Puntilla that picks and scouts and decides who should get it.
Who gets what.
Based on all his criteria, which was deep criteria, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was serious about it. He did not bring just anybody in, which is why I felt so honored, you know, that he involved me in everything. that he invited me to the bata classes, not to play, but to learn, because he saw where I was heading and what I needed in the way of knowledge. And there were some guys in the class that really questioned, you can't tape this. I said, Punti invited me. He didn't tell me that I can't tape it.
That's right. That's right.
And we were, you know, a lot of us were learning the songs. You know, we were all there because that the community needs women as well and needs a voice besides drums.
Absolutely.
You know, so
absolutely.
At that time I wasn't looking to play or challenge the rule of the understood rule, especially in Puntilla's world, which was more old school, that women didn't play. And I just wanted to be where I was, learning what I was learning, the way, any way I could get it, so it was okay with me.
Right, right. And it's directly in line with the Ocha traditions and Yoruba traditions, which are very inclusive of everybody. Mm. And everybody has their place, everybody has a role, nobody's left out, which is the beauty of the Ocha spiritual tradition.
Mm.
And I gotta say, you did an amazing job of weaving all of your influence, the folklore, the spiritual basis of all the music. You know, there are many people that will take, they'll attempt to take jazz and take it to that folklore side, but many times they'll do it without a deep understanding of the rhythms or the culture, and I would say the majority of the time it's void of any type of spirituality. And I have always understood jazz as being a sort of urban folklore. Jazz to me is basically urban folklore.
Yeah.
And so it makes perfect sense when I hear your music. To me it makes perfect sense. It also, aside from the fact that it resonates spiritually, but it's a kind of music that it just makes, you know, perfect sense when I hear it, you know.
Maybe it's because I do relate to it, to jazz in that, in the same way as you.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's become a ground for virtuosity, it always has.
Mm-hmm,
been,
mm-hmm.
There's always been virtuosos. I mean, the music calls for great talent, technique, and knowledge, but a lot of people approach it void of the spirituality and are not true improvisers, in that they have all the gimmicks to fill their gaps, and they're basically not necessarily playing in the moment, although they think they are, but to really do that means you take risks and challenges, and you're on the edge in some ways. And if you look at all the greats who had a spiritual air to their music, it's always about going some places that are unexpected and getting there in a way that you hadn't decided in front, you know, necessarily.
Right.
And I think that's what makes it folklore.
Mm-hmm.
And although urban, it really is philosophically a profound music that grew out of a social and cultural reality that a lot of people are stripping it of that, in the way that it's taught in the schools. No one has to live the life anymore. They're just paying the money to learn and gather the information. But I learned old school. I didn't go to school for music.
Mm-hmm.
It was about the hang. And for me, it's been about two deep hangs, because the jazz hang is in itself, you know, to really learn from the masters. That's a folklore tradition, is often an oral tradition.
That's right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then when it came to the traditions of Cuban folklore music, that was definitely about some hang as well. deep hang.
Absolutely.
And being places that you are really hard to get to, and not leaving till the middle of the night, and not even knowing how you're going to get home, that kind of thing.
Right, right, right.
And doing it on several fronts, you know,
makes
a life pretty adventurous and exciting. But the spiritual and folkloric nature of everything, as you say, I think that maybe the reason, well, there's a lot of reasons that this music retains its spirituality. It's because of my own involvement in the spirituality of the music, and the fact that that's not something I'm looking at, it's something I'm in.
That's right.
And also learning from the people I've learned from, my mentors, really just two, which was Ed Kelly, great pianist, incredibly spiritual person, a great gospel player as well. His approach to the moment, to the piano, to the touch, to improvising, to music period was about, I'm looking at him right now, was, well, that's always been my goal with this group, is to have a complete integration where nothing gets lost from either side. And that was hard to achieve for a lot of different reasons. I could hear it, but to manifest it has been a challenge all these years, and I feel like it's been manifested.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we're gonna stop talking about the music, and we're gonna listen to some of the tracks on the record. This is the first track on disc two. This is In Praise of Spiritual Guides, Egung, and of course Egung is the Yoruba manifestation of the ancestors. Elogio de las guías espirituales. You're listening to Havana Harlem Live. I'm your host, Onel Mulet, here on Black Hole Radio, and today my guest is pianist and composer Michelle Rosewoman. We're listening to her 30-year celebration of the New Yoruba Ensemble. Vito Rua 30-year celebration record. You just heard In Praise of Spiritual Guides, and it features soloist Freddie Hendrix on trumpet and Mike Lee on tenor, and of course Michelle Rosewoman. And we're talking about, we were off the mic talking a little bit about the relationship between what's going on with the Bata ensemble and the soloists, where many times Puntilla had a habit of being a kind of lock and rock player and just laying it down for everybody. With the entrance of Roman Diaz and Pedro Martinez into the group, there is an added level of communication between the soloists and the Bata. The communication or the riffing on the drum, known as floreo, by the person who's playing the lead drum, you can also hear a whole other level of communication because of the relationship between Pedro and Roman, who have played together so much, and they pretty much complete each other's sentences, and that really takes the music to a whole other level.
Yeah, yeah. What you said is true. I think, again, you know, it's like everything is needed. You know, you had Julito, who first came here and kept lots of the secrets, mm-hmm. because that needs to happen. And actually, nobody's giving them all away. I mean, there's, you know, even with Roman and Puntilla, there's a lot of stuff that will never be for everybody.
Right. That's something that... That's something that I hear a lot, and something that I pay very close attention to, because being involved in the culture and in the religion, and then you hear some chants or something on a record, and you say, wait a minute, but I was just at a Wido last week, and they didn't sing it like that, and how come, you know, how come Mongo sang it like that on the track, or how come they play it like that? And it's the whole culture of keeping the codes.
Mm-hmm.
And developing these secret ways of getting things in there, but without getting in trouble. And the fact that so many of our predecessors came here and had the freedom to record many things in New York City that they couldn't really record, or they couldn't really play on the air in Cuba, it's really deep.
Mm. And tempting to, you know, maybe to some to put it all out there,
mm-hmm.
in ways. Well, today it's much more common. And, you know, just thank God for the old school, anyone, you know, maintaining that. And Roman definitely represents that at this point in here on the East Coast especially.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got a few on the West Coast as well. But he's also a part of all the new everything. In fact, we're speaking about, you know, the evolution, and I was telling him that, you know, I love the way that he interacts, and the way that the music has been able to evolve, you know, because of that. But at the same time, the fact that he's so rooted in the traditions, in the respect and the practice and the old school ways, means that there's only so much, certain lines he won't cross. To me, that's really important in this group, maybe because I built it around my relationship with Puntilla in the first place. And Puntilla was always keeping the drummers in their place, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if they did, you know, if they responded or if they did variations, they had to be in keeping with what they'd been taught were correct variations. So, But Roman responds to the energy, and Pedro, of course. But Roman is sitting on Iya now in the mm-hmm. band. So when he took that, because for a long time Pedro was, and then he passed it over, you know,
mm-hmm.
to him. I remember kind of realizing after two, because I would kind of really leave that to the tamboreros. I don't tell them what to do in that regard, who should be playing what drum. I ask them, you know,
mm-hmm.
and because that's a school in its own right, and I inform myself on every level, but I definitely am shaping all aspects of the music But there's some things I don't have to do, and there's some things that don't call for me to do anything, you know, mm-hmm. when it comes to a tradition that's understood, that all I need to do is understand it so well that I don't have to alter it in ways that it shouldn't be altered when I integrate it, you know. That takes a lot of study, a lot of taking my time to make sure that things are as they should be. On my end, it gives legitimacy to what I'm doing, and it's all I've ever wanted to do, you know.
Right, right, and I think it's a perfect pairing because you are so knowledgeable and you are so deeply entrenched in the whole jazz tradition, but at the same time, you are completely immersed in the Yoruba culture, and then having this pairing of Román and Pedro with you, these two guys who they know where the lines are, and they are so deeply embedded in the culture and know the liturgy so well. When I talk mm-hmm. about the liturgy, I'm talking about the Bata Ensemble, mm-hmm. which was traditionally sacred music. But the more you get to hear the execution of this music in the hands of people like Román and Pedro, you really get a sense for the Bata being just pure music. And the way the handle that these guys have on these rhythms and the way that it's supposed to be interpreted, you can see that they have a very deep well of stuff like right at their disposal.
I think that's the dangerous line, because there's this kind of almost like uncanny, can't explain thing that is the fact that the Bata speak the Yoruba language.
That's right.
But that translates into what we're hearing musically. If you just think musically, it's like a rhythmic system that's just beyond belief, really. It's like, to me, the most profound in the world. I mean, there are, let's say there's others that are equally profound, but this is the one that touches me the deepest. And there's no end to its depth. I mean, you
That's
think
right.
you got a handle on it, it's only because you did not even know what just happened or who was playing what when you heard it.
Right.
And then
right.
when you realize all those things, it's even heavier. So, but I think that it's so, like, how do you even explain that? Except through a force, you know, beyond explanation, that a language is manifested
mm-hmm.
on the drums, literally, and that what comes out musically is what this is. So, but I think, for me, they should always be played from a seat of that knowledge and being rooted in the tradition, in the culture.
Oh, absolutely. I don't see it as coming from any other place.
No, just music for music's sake.
Yeah,
and
no, of course.
That's getting
not.
Done a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And Bata this, Bata that. I mean, everywhere you go, somebody's saying Bata, you know. I'm like, oh,
right,
Lord.
Right.
It's a little bothersome because it just... there's even no way to explain the fact that there's no reason for everybody to know everything about it, because
right.
the reasons for things being played have to do with the ceremonies and the rituals and the that they're connected within the meanings of each and everyday life, as
right.
is true of all cultural...
It goes back to the language, what you were saying. I mean, there's so many people right now... There's a trend in Bata to go towards this place of just dexterity and virtuosity, and the language is being lost.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very few people left, like Román and Pedro, and we had Puntilla, that really know the language. They know how to make that drum speak.
You know, the thing is that there's, thankfully, there's a new generation, a young generation of tamboreros that have studied with some of the, you know, old school people who respect that and are maintaining aspects of it. I'm having to reach out, because in this band, you know, we were speaking mainly about the folkloric side, but from every seat, you know, it was originally 14 piece, and I've always had amazing musicians in the band, jazz masters and folklorists, but nobody stays forever.
That's right.
So I need something that can flex. And, mm-hmm. and I have to say it's been really, really hard because until now I had live, you know, representation of the band where there were moments where we hit what it is I have in my heart and mind that I'm striving for. But now I have a CD that I can hand a new musician and say, here it is, here's the music, this is what we're going to do, learn it, here's the chart,
right.
This is what we're going for.
Mm-hmm. That's the watermark.
There's
the
goal.
Impression you got
to... Yeah, I can really say, then I can say to a particular instrumentalist that, okay, what you're hearing that person do on the recording is not necessarily what I need you to do. In fact, if you like, you can be a lot more this or a lot more that. You know, you don't have to, I don't want anyone to copy what's there, but the vision, the integration, the balance, you know. So now I have to reach out, you know, and meet new tamboreros as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we all know, this is Pedro's moment in his career.
Right.
Where he needs his complete focus for what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, as I felt honored by the fact that Puntilla really loved his connection with this group, he really valued it. That was such an honor to me. In the same way, I didn't know Roman had been playing with me for quite a while before we did that video for the Kickstarter project, which raised the funds
mm-hmm.
for this recording, along with, let me mention, thanks to co-producers Havana Harlem,
yeah.
Onel and Nela, that this came to be. And in the Kickstarter video, the videographer did a little interview with Roman, who stated in it that he had heard of New Yoruba in Cuba and it was his dream to come here and be a part of the project. I didn't know that, and he'd been playing with me for years. Well, I can't tell you what that felt like, you know.
Yeah.
And so, and then Pedro speaks the same way, that when he became a part of this project and Puntilla brought him in 98, so I had them both with me for a while. That was really great. He mentioned that, wow, he said when he heard the band, this is why I came to New York to do
That's
stuff
right.
like this. So, you know, it's like a huge honor that they've been, these guys have been a part of the band. And I need to keep it on that level, but I can't always have the same people available to me. So I have had to reach out, and in terms of the jazz players, I mean... all the great players that have played with the band through the years, and here I am at an evolution beyond the CD, which got recorded in April, released a couple weeks ago, and already I have very different personnel, along with personnel from the recording, including the great Billy Harper, for example, who I used to sit up in my room, in that same room where I would play the congas and sing to the orishas and feel the air change in the room. That's the same air I felt change in the room when I played Lee Morgan recordings and Billy Harper was on those. And I was like, God, I yelled out. I said, Lord, I want to make people feel the way they're making me feel. This is why I want to play music, you know. And then here I am, you know, I've known Billy a long time. I've been his sub at the New School for quite a few years. But this is actually the first time we've worked together, and we just played the Lake George Jazz Fest. And he's coming into Dizzy's with the band. And just to say that evolution is a beautiful part of things. You know, we fight it because we get attached to certain players, or we think that how is this going to really work without somebody. And it's really good to realize that this now has a life of its own, and that it will survive, you know, and that
Absolutely.
It will continue to evolve, and all kinds of new energy will come in and out of it and make it what it'll be.
Yeah, I think so. And that whole, you know, it's something that I remember growing up in Florida and playing with New York players down there. That's one thing I always remembered about New York band leaders and New York players, is that old school thing about the ensembles were defined by the people that were in the group,
mm.
right? And it continued like that. And it's evolved and it's grown from that. And we were talking before about how we were talking about it on the phone, how we're so fortunate to have this whole pool of people here in New York, and it's steadily growing.
Mm-hmm.
And also that the people are so responsive, and the people are getting it. I feel like everybody that's on the record and the people that you've been working with are so much in tune with you, first of all, and that they get the music. And just to see the look on their face at a gig or in a rehearsal when they're playing the music, and you can really see that they understand now and they're really getting where the music is coming from. And we're going to play another track from the record. This is Yemaya from Michelle Rosewoman's New Yoruba Ensemble. This is Havana Harlem Live for Black Hole Radio. I'm your host, Onel Mulet.
And just mention that the name of, this is for Yemaya, but the name of the track is Where Water Meets Sky.
Right, Where Water Meets the Sky. This is a track dedicated to the Yoruba deity, Yemaya, the Universal Mother.
And let me say that what happens on the end of this track is the zone that I kind of dream of that got manifested here. I mean, throughout there's great things happening, but there's something about what goes on the end there that's just a moment that I'll forever be grateful that it got captured on the CD.
Dedicated to the Yoruba deity Yemaya, the universal mother. And we're going to play a couple more tracks, and we're going to hear some more from Michelle Rosewoman. Michelle, talk to me a little bit more about Yemaya and the concept of where water meets the sky, and what this means to you in your whole conception of jazz and Afro-Cuban folkloric music.
Okay, well, it's the newest composition for the ensemble, and interestingly, I had songs and compositions for a good number of the Pantheon, but I had nothing for Yemaya, so I did have something which I haven't been using in the ensemble, so I felt like I needed to add that, and it was some years ago that I really tuned in to wanting to write something new, actually at the time where my mother passed 3 years ago, this month, in fact. And I felt it was appropriate to in tribute to her as well. So, and at that time, it was interesting because we actually go back, you and me and Nayla,
mm-hmm.
and we conceived of the name. I think it came through NADA, the idea.
That's right.
And
that's right.
I proposed it for a grant that I, you know, I tried to get a grant for writing a new composition that would be called Where Water Meets Sky. So although that didn't happen, I went on in the months preceding our rehearsals for the recording to write it, and as I was hearing it. So it involved, for me, it's really important that I get very deeply into every aspect of the nature of what it is I'm trying to do. And I always had, like, in the past, I had an immediate resource in Puntilla. Now, although I have some great tamboreros around me, it's not as close and in a daily way or across as many years as me and Puntilla. And Puntilla being featured in the band for 20-some years, and the fact that I wrote, picked keys around where his voice was. In fact, I rewrote the charts and put him in lower keys as his voice got deeper on some occasions, you know.
Wow.
Interesting to hear. As a matter of fact, we were listening yesterday, me and a couple of tamboreros, to one of the pieces we do, Earth Secrets, on there, which is one of Puntilla's favorites, which is what's called El Ofo Dule, or for Babaluaye. And we listened to his recorded version on Havana to New York, and he's in the key of like A-flat. And then we listened to, I think it was 1996, maybe, it would have been about 2000 when I took Puntilla to California, and we had a recording of what New Yoruba did there, and it was in the key of E-flat, different by a fourth, you know. And So I had him as a resource to where stuff I was working on and writing, I would sometimes call him up and ask him questions. Basically, this one, I just delved into it. I listened to everything Yemaya could get my hands on, especially that was heading in the direction I had in mind. I found a Yoruba Ndabo video performance of one of the frecuencias. Puntilla would call it frecuencia rather than sequencia, which I think is deep.
Yeah.
Frequency.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Of a sequence for Yemaya. And so it just as a starting point, you know, and then I had to delve deeply into what was going on rhythmically with things for Yemaya beyond what I had ever done, because I really wanted to discover, which is how I approach all of this. I use it as an opportunity to deepen my knowledge, not just to write something, which I could have working even if I didn't delve in that deep. It would work because I've been around this music. I've absorbed it in a lot of ways. So it was a deep few months of probing. And what makes it even deeper is the fact we're talking about the ocean and how deep is the ocean. And that's how deep is the rhythmic and vocal traditions that are aimed at and for and in honor of Yemaya. So she made me work. Let's put it like this. I'll put it in spiritual terms. She made me work because it's profound, as is
the Mariana Trench.
Mariana Trench. Yeah, and, you know, who knows what's at the bottom of the sea, you know, and that means a lot of things to a lot of us. So in the process, I just discovered a lot of intricacy rhythmically, a lot of things that manifest through her, including the fact that Yemaya, the ocean, is in the folklore and in the tradition credited as giving birth to all Orishas,
that's
being
right.
The Great Mother. And therefore, within Yemaya, within the rhythms and cantos for her, all the Orishas are acknowledged through Mojubas, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this became a part of the fabric of what I wrote. And I really got into the intricacies of what the Bata are doing in ways that allowed me to orchestrate the horns the way that I did.
Okay, the next track that we're going to listen to is a rumba, and it is a song entitled Perdón by the seminal Puerto Rican composer Pedro Flores. This is Havana Harlem Live, and we are sitting here talking with Michelle Rosewood, pianist and composer. composer of her New Yoruba Ensemble. You're listening to Black Hole Radio.
Sabes que te quiero con todo el corazón. quiero, madre buena, llorar.
Madre, no llores, guarda su lágrima.
Pero guarda su lágrima, pero guarda su lágrima.
Madre, no llores, guarda su lágrima.
Oye, madre, guarda su lágrima, guarda su lágrima.
Madre, no llores, guarda su lágrima.
Con eso quiero verla sufrir, no quiero verla llorar.
Urban septetos, there's been a tradition of taking songs, starting with tangos and then going into boleros and then interpreting them as rumbas.
Beautiful.
In the tradition of Cuban street music, and particularly in rumba. Did that play into your decision to include this song on the record, or to create this arrangement of Perdón?
Well, I think I was always looking for more ways to include rumba in our repertoire, and I have it as a part of my original, some of my original music, where that's the feel behind it that I felt fit the best, so that we're doing it instrumentally, actually, and I found ways to use some of the cantos for Ogun, etc., within rumba, within original compositions. But when I heard this Yoruba Andao recording of Perdón, which was just voice and drums,
mm-hmm.
and you've got these two melodies,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, already there's so much to work with right there, especially so because of, I mean, I don't know how historically, or you know, how common that is as an approach, but it seemed to me really, really unique,
mm-hmm.
that you've got these two voices singing these two songs with two different sets of words that interweave in the most beautiful way. And then there was no harmonic instruments, just the voice and the drums, so it left me really free to interpret. And I actually had never listened to I didn't want to hear the original with all the instrumentation, because I really wanted my mind open to see what I heard and how I would arrange it for the band. So that's how that came to be, and it's like so different from everything else, and it's really, I think it's really special, especially on the recording because of the blend of Pedro and Abraham Rodriguez.
Oh, that's what I was going to say, the blend of the two voices. It's a tune that really showcases A.B. and Pedro, and this counterpoint that they had going, and the fact that you mentioned Yoru Andavo, it wasn't completely lost on me, because Yoru Andavo, you know, has that they have that whole Pancho Quinto thing going on, where they have all this bata stuff in the rumba, and the fact that you have, you know, people that were seminal members of
Roman.
Yoru Andavo, especially Roman, that kind of give it that flavor.
And
that
I didn't
feel.
Know him then, you know
exactly,
what I mean? It just
exactly.
happened, said now, and now he's in the ensemble. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. No, this whole recording, this whole project, there's so many bridges, there's so many things. The fact that Roman himself felt so connected to you and so connected to your music from way back when.
And then I met Pancho when I went to
that's
Cuba
right.
with Puntilla. And I met him through Puntilla. And then it was interesting because I was just telling some guys this story the other day that I was there for 3 weeks and I was around Pancho a lot, and it wasn't until the last few days I was there that he heard me playing. Can you remind me, there was a flute player that passed away very young. He had a band in Cuba. Anyway, I met somebody in Cuba that we got together to exchange music while I was there, and we were listening to New Yoruba together, and Pancho was in the house, and a woman that sang with him was there, and she came into the room, and she left and brought him back in and said, "Pancho, check this out." And then Pancho called me to the side, and he told me, "You've been around me for 2 weeks, you're a musician, and you didn't tell me?" And I said, "Well, you know, Pancho, everybody's like pulling at you, Pancho this, Pancho that, Pancho, Pancho." I said, "I don't want to be just one more. I guess I kind of thought there might be an appropriate moment, so maybe this is the one, you know." And then I find out later that Roman learned about me through Pancho, that somehow I must have left the recording of New Yoruba with Pancho. I don't remember, but I must have.
Yeah.
And he played it for Roman, and so Roman knew. And then, of course, with Puntilla in the band, through his presence in the band, a lot of people in Cuba came to know about the band because of his involvement.
That's right.
Those connections run pretty deep.
Yeah, definitely. Puntilla definitely spread the word. And Pancho is such a creative person, such a creative and sensitive human being.
And old school at the same time.
Yeah, totally old school.
I remember him telling me he had an idea to do a recording with three Oconcolos.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, that told me a lot about him.
He was such an innovator, and in the whole bata thing, you know, there are people that are very tied to the whole orthodoxy, and then you have the Pancho Quinto school. Pancho is such an innovator, such a creative
and
person.
And Roman, of course, grows out of that.
Roman has a lot of that. Roman is one of the most creative tamboreros that I've ever heard.
Roman Diaz, by the way.
Roman Diaz. That's the name. Yeah.
Roman this, Roman that.
Yeah. And I also want to mention, you know, when we mentioned Julito, of course, Julito, for our listeners that are not familiar with Bata, the sacred drum ensemble of the Yoruba religion, Julito Collazo, one of sacred Yoruba music's most famous practitioners and drummers. Julito came to this country in the 50s with Catherine Dunham from Cuba, and he was the first person to bring bata to the U.S. And all the bata drumming, the bata drummers in the U.S. started with his lineage.
Which is a great line, Jesus Perez and Puntilla's line.
That's Jesus Perez and Puntilla's line, Añabi. And I just wanted to mention that for folks that are not familiar with the bata music and familiar with the history of that music here in New York. We owe that to Catherine Dunham, who brought him over from Cuba in the 50s. Of course, a great modern dancer. And I've read many things recently written by Lidia Cabrera and many other people who studied the Yoruba culture, Catherine Dunham continues to be a great source of a lot of that information.
This is just, you know, this continuum is real. I mean, and Cuba has always resonated with jazz, various jazz artists, whatever exposure there was. There was, you know, not familiar. They weren't familiar with everyone here any more than we were with everyone there. But there's always been an affinity. And then, of course, the fact that a dancer such as Catherine involved Julito and was connected, you know, and everybody knows her here in the dance world. It's just sort of an endless bunch of connections, and it really just really goes back to the roots,
that's right,
which have not been diffused or destroyed in any way through the passage of time or the great passage and all the horrendous things that happened in the forcible removal of Africans from, you know, from Africa and all of what's happened here through slavery. This is all connected. I mean, and I mentioned earlier the jazz tradition and what it grows out of a social and cultural reality. And then one of the things that I found really interesting when I was I really was so drawn to jazz, just musically speaking, because of its intricacies and the subtleties and the transparencies and things. Interesting, my mother being a great visual artist, when I look at her work, it's like that, and I very detailed, very subtle, and very where you could see in, and I realize a lot of the way I hear and write comes from that. So these disciplines are all connected. I felt that jazz was profound in that it doesn't always state the obvious and leave some things to the imagination. And then I feel that also that when I heard, you know, the folklore and the Cuban traditions, I felt similar. I felt the same kind of things about the music. I heard similarities right away that had to do with the obscuring of things, you know, making things less obvious, not beating someone over the head with something. You know where the one is, especially by not playing it, by playing everything around it, you know. Mm-hmm. And in jazz, we get off the one as quick as we learn where it is, you know, in the chord. We learn the 1-3-5-7 of a chord. We get off the one and play the two instead because that's the color tone.
That's
right. And it implies the rest, so that now there's room for the imagination. Same with time and rhythm. We get off the one and the three, and we think 2-4. And I just felt that there was a lot in common, and I think that that's why there is this affinity. That's why Art Blakey and A Night in Tunisia and Dizzy and John Oposo and Catherine Dunham and Julito and everything we can think of, all these connections are they're natural, they're organic. And in my process, I try not to force any element but discover where things really, really meet. And I think that's where I was leading off with speaking about the Yemaya process, was trying to discover what was there as opposed to impose anything on it. And because it's all there, if you trust that,
right,
then
right,
you follow that kind of a flow.
Yeah, and everything grows out of there. Yeah, of course. This next track that we're going to hear, it's always been one of my favorite tracks on this project. I think because I remember when you did your show at the Painted Bride. And we did a live recording, and you and I worked a lot on the tune, like mixing and editing it, and I got very familiar with your arrangement and the way that it's grown and the way that it sounds now. I just always felt really attached to it, and I paid so much attention to it, and it became one of my favorite tunes on the record, and this is Obatala. Tell me about the soloist on this tune.
Okay, and also for between then and the manifestation of the recording, we sort of expanded the names so that, you know, get into what is the essence of Obatala here.
Yeah.
And call it what's it called there?
Natural light.
Natural light. And then, well, the thing on this, you asked me about the solos, but basically the feel is real funky because of the nature of the rhythm play for Obatala, mm-hmm, which is like the original funk, you know.
Yeah.
All you got to do is hear what they play there to kind of know where that lays. And it's a good example of where I tried to discover what was inherent to the song and the rhythm. And for me, it came out like, sounded like a James Brown bass line with some James Brown kind of horn stuff on top. That's where it lived, I think, you know. I sure didn't force it.
No.
And soloists on this, so the whole thing is like, it's really in form, it's a lot simpler than anything else, especially on the recording, because it's just a vamp that has a lot of different things going on in the arrangement over it and across it and through it. And the tonality is pretty much the same throughout it. So when it comes to the solos, we're really stretching and opening up
mm-hmm.
and leaving that F minor tonality as we feel like it, because now we're just in a zone.
Mm-hmm.
And if the bass player can let go of the root and the piano, then the piano can solo, can just move through time and space in another way. And then Freddie, I believe, the second soloist is the trumpet player, Freddie Hendrix.
Freddie Hendrix, yeah.
So we both pretty much stretch it out on the solos, and yet because of the, you know, it's so grounded rhythmically, it's you can put anything on top of that kind of a groove, and people can still hear and get to what you're doing because the groove is so strong. And then there's moments where both he and I get very sparse, and really all you hear, what you hear, are the bata and the space that it creates, and then the instruments kind of come in and out of that. I like dynamics a lot. I like, I don't feel like you have to start soft and end up loud. And I like to work with the rhythm section that allows that flexibility to go from intensity back to something very open.
Yeah, cause it feels very organic. You can hear breathing.
That's
yeah,
a good way to put
and
it.
And that real, that subtlety, that really makes music great, you know. and to hear that from such a large ensemble, that's not something that's very easy to achieve. That's a very, very difficult effect to achieve.
Yeah, because the energy is always outdoing itself and taking control. It has its own energy that peaks all the time, and you have to, you know, really I have to remind people about, look, you know, let's use space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so full. I mean, with a bata, got every crack in time is full.
Mm-hmm.
With what bata do, they found every nuance. They get in between everything. There's something in between the 32nd, you know, 32nd and 16th notes. There's things in between them, you know. So where's the space? It's on another dimension, but it's there.
Yeah, it's there.
So it's really great when we hit that, when you hear it breathing. I think it's what I like a lot about this recording. There's a lot of breath in it.
Yeah.
As dense as everything is, there's room, there's space, and
yeah,
there's
everything
breath.
Moves. There's a lot of dialogue, and it's amazing to hear that collective mindset in a jazz conception where everybody is so about their whole individual approach and their own voice. But to hear everybody play together in this whole collective mindset and attack all the subtleties and just get it right is really deep. It says a lot about you and how you relate to the people that work with you, and it also says a lot about your concept as a composer and how you approach the ensemble. Chico Farrell used to say that the big band was his instrument, and that's what I think about when I think of a large ensemble.
Mm.
But it's at a whole other level when you have to count on these players bringing something of themselves and managing to keep that whole collective mindset in there.
In that light, yeah, I really always look for very unique voices, and I want them to surprise me and surprise themselves, and I want the fact that they're a part, as the horn players are, a part of something that they really, most of them have never or rarely been in the middle of, that they allow that to take them where it takes them.
Mm-hmm.
And although I don't think we've emphasized anything that Oliver Lake is soloing on, he is such a unique voice on the recording. It's a perfect example of a voice that I absolutely had to have on this for it to be what I wanted to
be. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, there's so much material here. I mean, this two CD set, it clocks in at 110 minutes.
Yeah,
we're definitely going to have another program.
I couldn't cut anymore.
Dedicated to this. And
you know, we cut stuff out to,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
It's, well, 30 years of music finally getting recorded,
yeah,
you know. Not that we recorded everything either.
No.
But, you know, everything that seemed important.
Okay, this is Obatala. The track is entitled Natural Light on Michelle Rosewoman's New Yoruba 30 Years, a musical celebration of Cuba in America. This is Havana Harlem Live. I'm your host, Onel Mulet, from Black Hole Radio.
Thank you.
Okay, you're listening to Havana Harlem Live. I'm your host, Onen Mulette, and I'm here with Michelle Rosewoman on Black Hole Radio. We're going to wrap this up now, reluctantly, but we're going to leave you with a few parting words from Michelle, and then we're going to listen to a song for Ochung. Is this the vamp for Ochung?
No.
This is the rezo for Ochung. This is a prayer to Ochung, the goddess of love, the goddess of the river, and sister to Yemaya. Tell us a little bit about this last track that we're going to leave everybody with, Michelle.
Okay, well, Ochung being very close to me. And,
yes.
I wanted to do something special, and there was a sequence of rezo for Ochung that I heard Lázaro Rojas do. That's very beautiful. So I wanted to do it in a way where I made, just with solo piano and voice, and I made no decisions harmonically ahead of time. I spent months practicing this in such a way that I would be guided on another level as to what chords to hit where, to never work it out and to keep it very flowing, harmonically open, that anything could happen at any time. So it's never been played like it is on the recording, and it'll never be played like that again, which is the idea. And then I had the idea to have Abraham Rodriguez sing another. He's got a beautiful rezo for Ochung that he does. So I brought him in to come in and out of this with that prayer, so it becomes a solo piano piece with two voices, and it's different from anything else on there. And I think that there's magic that happens because I made sure I left just about every aspect of it in the air, except for that melodically the prayers for Ochung are what they would be. But of course, harmonically, that could be anything, which is where the freedom comes in and the magic comes in, because, as I say, I try to completely go with flow. I try to go with flow on this one every time I do it, so that it'll be completely different every time.
Well, you definitely achieved that level of magic on this track, and I just want to talk about the players again, and I'd like to mention all the players that are on the record. Of course, we've spoken about Román Díaz, Pedro Martínez, and A.B. Rodriguez. But on the horns, you have, on trumpet and flugelhorn, you have Freddie Hendrix. On soprano and alto saxophones and flute, you have the great Oliver Lake. Mike Lee is on tenor saxophone and flute. The great trombonist Vincent Gardner on trombone, and the legendary Howard Johnson on baritone saxophone and tuba. Junior Terry is on acoustic bass. Adam Cruz is on drums. You also have Nina Rodriguez on vocals, and Daniel Carbonell with Chanel Critchlow as an additional tuba on a couple of the tracks. Like I said, this is too much material for one show, but we'll definitely have another show dedicated to some more music. I'd love to talk more about Liberty Ellman's role in the production of this CD. Liberty did a great job with the mix and the mastering and just the whole process leading up to the conception of the CD. And also, I'd love to hear some more tracks with Oliver Lake on. And I'd like to mention the upcoming show. Michelle, can you tell us about the show that's coming up this week?
Sure, yeah. This is our New York CD release event. And the CD was just released on the 10th of September. And so we have at Dizzy's two nights, September 30th, Monday the 30th, and Tuesday, October 1st. And the Monday the 30th is a live WBGO webcast, and so the personnel is somewhat different from the CD because that's the nature of this. And I'll be going in with Freddie Hendrix on trumpet, Antonio Hart on alto soprano, the great Billy Harper on tenor, Stafford Hunter on trombone, Howard Johnson on variant tuba, Adam Cruz on drums, and Greg August on bass, and on bata will be Roman Diaz, Abraham Rodriguez, Nikki LaBoy, and Nina Rodriguez is going to come in to sing on some stuff as well. So it's just that evolution that will always be.
Yes.
And it's a good thing, you know.
It's part of the music.
It makes the music grow. Yeah, very excited to be sharing this music with the public. I mean, we debuted in 1983 at the Public Theater. And this is literally 30 years later that we are have made and released our debut CD. Unusual. But somehow, all as it should be.
Yeah, yeah. Everything feels right, for sure. And the music continues to evolve. Come out to Dizzy's. Pick up a copy of the CD.
Oh, yeah, at CD Baby. I don't have the website offhand, but look up Rose Woman New Yoruba CD Baby, and you can get it there. It's also available through Amazon, iTunes for download. And I'll have it on hand at Dizzy's as well. Or
yep.
Anybody can contact me, find me online, write me at my website, communicate directly with me, www.michellerosewoman.com. That's Michelle with one L, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, or michellerosewoman.com/New Yoruba to go to the New Yoruba page specifically, where you can also click purchase, and
yes,
it'll take you to CD Baby.
If you're listening because you got an invite from me on Facebook, you can get all those links and all that information right on the invite, or you could get it at the link for the show at Blog Talk Radio. So we're going to leave you with prayer for Ochung. And this is Havana Harlem Live for Blog Talk Radio. My name is Onel, and I've been your host. And it's been a great pleasure to sit here and talk with Michelle about this amazing project that I've had the amazing fortune and the blessing to be involved in one level or another for the past few years. And I'm so happy to see it come to fruition, and everything comes at its due time.
It's beautiful. I met you, Onel, at the Homenaje for Puntilla. Or we didn't meet, but you were there.
Yeah, yeah.
At the Schoenberg soon after he passed. And then I happened to call you sometime later and found out that you were there. And here we are years later at this point in time. So these connections are beautiful, and I want to encourage everyone to listen to your show, because in Onel you have a historian and someone with a lot of knowledge who's also a great musician and a
thank
great
you.
Person.
Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. So we're leaving you with this prayer for Ochung. Make sure to tune in to Black Hole Radio for a variety of programming for all your needs. If you're interested in politics, if you're interested in different philosophies and alternative health, music, black culture and history, Black Hole Radio has something for everyone. I'd like to thank my Black Hole Radio family. I'd like to thank Brother Forrest Muhammad and Brother Jason. Thank you for supporting this programming. And thanks to all the listeners. And thank you, Michelle, for sharing your beautiful music with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Good night, and God bless.
Falafa la osu la te koyu. Senito Churumi Yare.
Ya lo de Moloko Moloko.
Ya lo de Ape. En Iowola Senito Churumi Yare.
Ya lo de Moloko Moloko. Ala de
Ape.
Awacha mai koko, awacha mai koko. Yalote apete bi olumila. Awacha mai koko.
Black Hole Radio. Oh, Black Talk Radio.